You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 22nd of September 2015, right here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Tyler Brulé. On today's show, the corporate sector in Germany is reeling after revelations that Volkswagen rigged emissions tests for US regulators. Meanwhile, Berlin's much maligned and endlessly delayed airport has, you guessed it, been delayed yet again. I'll take a look at what's next for Germany's corporate scene with my studio guests Xenia Wickett and Roger Boys. And some newsstand shelves in Thailand were a little bare today after local printers declined to publish today's Tuesday edition of the International New York Times. We'll discuss the rather sensitive topic of the nation's aging monarchy, plus what happens when the Pope weighs in on politics, and will the return of Brian Williams help or hinder MSNBC's new direction? That's all to come in Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé. And welcome to studio. And just gone about 15 seconds past 1800 here in London. Welcome to Xenia Wickett, of course, a regular guest on our program, project director at Chatham House's US program, and Roger Boys, diplomatic editor at the Times newspaper here in London. Welcome, both of you. We're just chatting about holidays and all things like that. And even in our just, sort of post-sunshine chatter, we were talking about Frau Merkel being a bit of a lover of hiking around the Dolomites, no doubt in some very trusty shoes, made in Bavaria or something like that. It's going to be a little bit of Germany for the top of the show anyway. First up today, we want to look at a pair of corporate disasters that are rippling across the nation sector. Indeed, it looks as though Volkswagen will be splashed across the headlines for some time to come after the automaker was found to be rigging emissions tests for US regulators, prompting authorities in other regions to launch their own investigations. Meanwhile, Berlin's new airport, one we've been hearing about quite a bit, remember, it was set to open in 2012. It's going to be delayed again after possible structural flaws were found in the roof. That was, of course, forcing authorities to order a halt in the construction first time around. Well, now Germany remains the epicenter of Europe, of course, with all manners of stories surrounding it. We only have to remember, of course, another story as well, which, of course, was something of a blow to brand Germany. That was, of course, the Germanwings crash a little bit earlier in the year. I guess, Roger, maybe we'll start with you. When you look at this, and I was in Munich last week talking to the business sector, and many people said, we can handle this as a country right now, talking about the whole migration issue. And this is just last week. Someone said, but something happens, another wobble in China for the auto sector. Or indeed, if something just rather dreadful happened, they weren't probably talking about the Bavarian automakers. But here we have a crisis up in Wolfsburg suddenly. Is this just a blip or is there something, perhaps seriously wrong in Berlin and Halls beyond?
Well, I do think that Volkswagen crises, the last one was a kind of sex scandal about 10 years ago, do always have some kind of systemic impact. It's quite largely owned by the state of Lower Saxony, so anything that happens to it has an immediate impact on public finances. And it goes well beyond that. I'm assuming that Winterkorn, the boss of Volkswagen, will probably have to go at some stage, but it goes well beyond that. It goes towards the whole idea of how we think about diesel cars. Is it, the whole of energy and fuel policy has been based or structured around diesel and their fuel efficacy. And now that looks to be in jeopardy. And then there's the whole knock-on effect with other car manufacturers. Is Volkswagen the only one? Probably Volkswagen is hoping against hope that it's not the only one, that actually lots of people have been rigging their test cars. And it's something, and there's a whole question of regulation too. Why wasn't this spotted not only in Volkswagen, but by European regulators? Why does it have to be the American regulator that spotted this? So I think there are multiple crises which are going to unravel now over the next, months, I suppose, and they'll come back to bite Germany quite big.
Xenia, brand Germany in so many ways is built around trust and going the distance and being incredibly thorough and thorough again. And this cuts right to the core of what the essence of that brand is. And we only have to look at there's been blips in other areas as well. But here's a country. You look at the Mittelstand, and of course how this underpins when you think about the supply chain of any of the big automakers. Reliability, just focus on what they do. Does this start to really send a series of ripple effects across the country? Just at a time, and I think we'll come back to the migration issue a little bit later. But what do you think starts to happen now?
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, the reality is, that we've come to expect this from everybody. I mean, as I was reading the story this morning, what jumped into my mind is, if I take you back almost 4 years ago now, 3 years ago, to the Olympics here, and I remember listening to an Olympic swimmer say, well, of course I cheat on the turns. Everybody cheats on the turns. And until they figure out how to test us for cheating on the turns, we're all going to cheat on the turns because it makes a big, little infinitesimal difference in our time. And if everybody else is going to do it, well, I'm going to do it too. And I feel like this is much the same. I mean, unfortunately, we have come to expect that, if one person cheats, then everybody starts to cheat unless you can find ways to measure to prevent cheating. This is true in Olympic swimming. This is true on emissions. This is true on financial regulations. We're all testing the boundaries. What is changing today is that there is a development in technology in many cases that allow us to test far more effectively than we have historically been able to do. And so, sad to say, no longer do we trust that people are going to do the right thing and live by the sense of the law rather than the word of the law. We actually now have to put in place systems, whether they're environmental systems or they're financial systems or they're sports systems, to allow us to test because everybody is pushing that boundary just as much as they possibly can.
Roger, we saw obviously what happened to the share price almost immediately with Volkswagen, but does something happen this weekend if you've had your eyes on a peppy little Golf convertible and you live in New Jersey? Are you suddenly thinking, oh, I might see if Toyota has something in their lineup and I'm going to go look somewhere else or probably not?
Well, I think you'd be pretty crazy to look at the Toyota, to be honest. But I think most people buy cars according to their pocket, their dreams, and some residual brand experience. I don't think people buy Volkswagens for their energy efficiency or their low carbon emissions. Well, maybe for their energy efficiency, but not for the low carbon emissions. And on the whole, I don't think so. No, this is something else, but it is more than what Xenia was saying. I think it's more than doping athletes. It's something quite important when you've got a national brand that is absolutely the same as the Volkswagen brand, which is about trust and it's about sensible value for money and not cheating. So I do think there is something really, really important, and the PR world must be having a bonanza at the moment.
So I don't want to underestimate it. You're right, it is important. But what it is Germany coming down to the same level that everybody else is on. Whereas we used to think that Germany was somehow better, more reliable, these days, to some extent, we just shrug and say, well, actually, they're coming down to our level today.
Let's maybe go up to Berlin for a moment and then think, how does this then reflect? And I think spend a little bit of time on this Merkel moment, because was this supposed to be really, the setting that we've seen over the last sort of 3 weeks, that this is Merkel's moment where we come good, we gain a bit of international credit by, of course, opening up our borders, perhaps rewriting the rules slightly, and then, this backfires in your face. And I guess in a double respect, and Xenia, I'll start with you. I mean, suddenly have this wobble, and a lot of states are going to be saying, how are we going to be able to afford this? We can kind of get around it, but if there's the slightest little tremor, our country's in trouble.
And I guess I think that this is precisely why I'm a little kind of hesitant to say that this is going to be a big story, because what is the bigger story is who is showing leadership in Europe on some of the biggest fires today, the migrant issue, economic growth, you know, and the answer is increasingly, I mean, increasingly it's Germany. I had a conversation today with two visitors from Germany, and we were talking about, is Germany effectively in a number of areas replacing the UK as America's partner in Europe? And the answer is, yeah, on some issues, absolutely, increasingly, that is taking place. And that's taking place for far bigger, more profound reasons that actually, right at the moment, it is Merkel that is out there in front. It is Merkel that is joining together with Hollande to negotiate with the Russians. This is happening more and more. And so while, you know, the VW situation is a wobble, it's not a wobble that in the broader kind of geopolitical sense really makes that much of a difference, as long as Merkel is doing these all of these other things, or Germany writ large is doing these other things.
Roger, if Merkel, of course, has to be in 100% lockstep with corporate Germany to make sure that, you know, that she can, of course, whether it's for open borders, whether she can choose to deploy German forces a little more than she might have done in the past, whatever it is, it strikes me, you know, going back to not just to Volkswagen, but, you know, I think many other things that have happened as well, that, you know, does it end up that Merkel is either going to be potentially, she becomes Secretary General, or she gets a Nobel Prize for all of these efforts, it really sort of goes down in history as actually a bit of a disaster, particularly when you think of borders being open. And we're 3 weeks into this. We're moving to, I guess, probably the third weekend now, after this sort of, you know, really sort of opened up. And I was talking to someone from the Frankfurt Allgemeine, and they were saying, you know, this is where the questions really start to be asked. Everyone felt very good that the borders were open, but now people ask some very difficult questions around the dinner table.
Yes, I mean, the danger is that we've created, she doesn't see herself as a superwoman or a super leader, I don't think, but the weight of expectations from the rest of Europe is that she is, mainly in the absence of other leaders, I suppose. And the danger is that this can flip. It can flip very easily and very quickly. And you can see it with an accumulation of crises that you mentioned, that Volkswagen actually, it's not Volkswagen by itself that's the problem. It's the border issue going wrong. It's all the resentments that have that were stirred up by the bailout, the Greek bailout. It's infrastructural projects going wrong. There's a whole series of things that are coming together now, and there's a real danger that she might go down in history. She's been 10 years in power now. She wanted to pack up after about 12 years, but I can see that she might not be able to. Is that it flips, and she may be the person who goes down in history as the person who atomized Europe. That's to say, turned creditor nations against debtor nations, turned, as we saw today and yesterday, a lot of Central and East European countries are absolutely furious that they might have to accept quotas of refugees, for example. That turns East against West. People are worried that Germany is not supportive enough in defending the east of the EU and NATO against Putin. There's a whole east-west, north-south thing going on, and she's right at the center of it. So we've created Merkel, but at the same time, it might end up finishing her off.
So you're not so concerned about the corporate side, though. But if we were to hang in around the Reichstag a little bit, do you think that there's work that needs to be done there right now?
No question. I mean, I guess, and maybe this is the glass half empty side of my personality. I mean, the issue is at the moment. I mean, I had a dinner party, attended a dinner party a couple of years ago in New York, and with a group of corporates, about 16 corporates around the table, and one of the Indian businessmen runs a company said, "Name me the top leaders of today." Five, and I couldn't. You know, and, you know, if we were to name five, I can absolutely guarantee you, because I've had this conversation with a number of people since, everybody comes up with Merkel at some point. And they don't necessarily come up with Merkel because she's a great leader. In many cases, they come up with Merkel because there isn't another European out there who can come close. And so I agree very much with Roger. I mean, I think a lot of this is hanging on one individual, and that is extraordinarily dangerous. But I have a little bit, I guess, I think the glass half empty side of me says the bar is pretty low for leadership in Europe today. Mm. Relatively speaking, it's not terribly hard, notwithstanding the airport, notwithstanding VW. You know, there are numerous examples of German companies that really are at the top of their game. I think that this is probably a blip. And I think there's more substance to it, if only because everybody else is finding it so hard.
Mm, Roger, if you had to, if you got the phone call to say what we'd like a diplomatic editor's view of what might be done, and of course that's no small task. But there's two things at play. You know, this potential sort of vacuum that could be left if it all goes wrong. That's not all going to go wrong in three or four months. But you know, three things that she can do to sort of right a ship, which is clearly listed. Right now?
What the expectation of her, of course, is that she has to spend more money. Yeah, she has to spend more money or more German money in sheltering refugees. And if you think the Greek crisis is over, you're absolutely mistaken. Mm. So the first thing to do is to have a proper conversation with Wolfgang Schäuble, your finance minister, and make sure that your country really can sustain these levels of pressure. The second is to make sure, I guess, that you have a proper, strong, centralized government and that it doesn't completely atomize within Germany. And the third is to be more effective diplomatically. She's losing a lot by the wayside because of the multiplicity of crises.
Mm. Do you think, Zeynep, just before we go to a break, that if you're in several different chanceries around Europe, that you've got some very, very busy ambassadors, of course, have to toe the line of Berlin and what the foreign ministry is saying, but also I think putting out sort of their own special regional fires as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what is clear from Merkel's balance, and you know, I'll take you back about 4 years now, the decision. Because of the regional voting that was taking place in Germany at the time, to abstain from participating in the NATO operation in Libya, you know, and what Germany, the problem that the Germans, that Merkel is having, as everybody else is this very, very tight political domestic battle that they're having, along with a very tight economic constraints that they're in, with the growing number of global and regional conflicts that are taking place, or crises that are taking place. And it really is balancing that. And I think, you know, to pick off what Roger was saying, you know, if there's one thing that is easy to say but extraordinarily hard to do, is to say, you know, at some level, leaders, including Merkel, actually have to show leadership, which she appears to be doing on the migrant case, to move away from what is a politically expedient thing to do domestically, to actually resolve some of the broader crises that are taking place. How you do that, how you manage that balance, because of course you can never go one way rather than the other, or else you'd be out on your derriere very quickly, is going to be extraordinarily hard. Merkel is the one who is probably furthest ahead in managing that balance.
Mm. You are listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24. Zeynep Wicket and Roger Boys are our guests today. We're going away for a short break. When we come back, we're going to jump across the Atlantic, maybe also head up to Moscow as well. Stay with us.
Monocle loves books. We love them so much that we have our very own books team in partnership with our friends at Gestalten in Berlin. We've already launched the muscular and handsome Monocle Guide to Better Living and the Monocle Guide to Good Business too, plus the London, New York, Hong Kong and Tokyo titles in our new hardback City Guide series. And now there's the giant Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes that's packed with inspiring residences and practical advice for making your ideal and welcoming residence. Monocle's books offer a world of new experiences between the covers, whether you're staying at home or seeking new adventures. See our full lineup of well-turned-out titles at monocle.com and on the shelves of all great bookstores.
Just gone 18:19 here in London. You are listening to Midori House with me, Tyler Berlay. Zeynep Wicket is here from Chatham House, also Roger Boys of The Times. A couple of things we were talking about at the top of the program. I guess Probably the first one that I'm keen on is when to call it quits. We all recall the rather high-profile departure of one of America's big nightly news anchors, Brian Williams, having a bit of a brain lapse as to whether or not he was on a chopper and what that chopper was doing and where it was in theater in the world. Of course, he had to leave the anchor desk at NBC's Rockefeller Center World Headquarters. But he's coming back, but he's not coming back into the same seat. He's going to, well, of course, one of their smaller outlets, MSNBC, in a breaking news role. So just, I mean, Roger, you're in the news business. Is there sort of a time when you suddenly have to go down to really the kind of the farm team in a way, and then you're almost sort of sitting on the bench? Should he have gone gracefully?
Well, I did go sort of gracefully, didn't he? I mean, I think it's worked out quite well in a way. I mean, it was stupid, of course, for him to basically lie about his experience. I mean, to embellish his warfighting credentials. But first of all, I'm in favor of as many 24-hour news channels as possible in America, since they're so underexposed to foreign news, that anything, absolutely anything, is of value. And if he attracts some attention to that, then that's fine. But I do note it's quite interesting. His new role is not at all really celebritized.
No.
It's as a kind of traffic warden for the news flow. And I think that's quite a good thing to have. That's how anchors used to be before they became, you know, multi hundreds of thousands or whatever it is, salaried, you know, featured in People magazine kind of people. So I think he's been taken down a peg, but he hasn't been, you know, sent to Siberia. I think that's quite a useful and, for American media terms, quite an intelligent outcome.
They also, MSNBC, of course, is known as the most liberal of voices amongst the rolling news channel. So I guess a good thing that he's popped it there. Also that he has earned his stripes. He's got a few stamps in his passport. Thoughts?
Mm. Yes, I mean, I agree with Roger. I think the fact that he's back is probably a good thing. The problem that NBC and MSNBC had is that they didn't have a lot of depth, of good depth of reporters and journalists, certainly not of his caliber. And I think there's very little question that he is very high caliber, albeit that he has some issues with lying, which one shouldn't underestimate. But, you know, the rehabilitation, I actually think it is important that we rehabilitate, and we can talk about the Pope next, the importance
exactly.
of rehabilitation. So I agree with it. I mean, I guess I echo what Roger says in terms of the more good, high-quality news channels, the better. The concern I have, and I say this as an American, is can I emphasize the word news? Because too many of America's news channels really aren't news at all.
No.
What is, as you were intimating, Tyler, he is a news presenter, if you will, with very strong credentials in terms of his understanding, his experience on the ground, and I think that is extraordinarily valuable. Too many don't have it. It would be nice to see him try and raise the standards across the board.
Mm.
It's significant, of course, that he's come back for the Pope Francis visit.
No, nice segue, Rob.
It might even be the Pope's first miracle on American soil, return of Brian Williams.
And let's stay on that. Zane, your thoughts? I think he should have touched down in, the Pope, that is, should have touched down in D.C. by now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating. You know, I mean, there's so much going on in the United States. You've got, you know, big geopolitical, you know, Chinese President Xi's visiting at the moment, who's also just touched down today, I think, in Seattle. You've got the Pope touching down. So you've got, you know, you've got religion, you've got geopolitics, and then you have comedy in the Republican debates. So, I mean, you know, that everything, I'm an Americanist, clearly I'm biased, but there is so much going on in the United States that is touching upon different parts of American culture. And of course, all coming together, you've got Congress debating funding Planned Parenthood and should they be using the Pope's visit as an opportunity to push that or not. I mean, there's a whole set of really interesting conversations. Of course, this is the first Pope, as I understand it, who's ever, this is the first time the Pope has ever been in his 78 years to the United States. So this is incredibly meaningful. And of course, he comes from Cuba, and the changes in the Cuba-US relationship over the last year, again, incredibly meaningful. It will be very interesting to see how the politics plays what he says and what he does. Of course, it's the first pope to ever talk to both houses of Congress. I mean, there's a lot of firsts here. It's going to be very interesting to see how the politics and the religion mix.
And he's not just brushing the tarmac as well, Roger. I mean, this is a proper six-day visit as well.
Yes, and he's got a proper audience. He's got 54 million Latinos, who by 2060 or something will be almost 30% of the United States. I mean, this is a serious constituency that's now building up. I do worry about his politics, though. Mm. I do worry that human rights barely gets mentioned if you compare the Polish Pope's visit to Cuba with his. There's a lot of accommodation going on with these leftist governments in Latin America, and I don't think that sends an amazing signal about his political judgment.
It was good to segue onto the Pope. There's also two media stories as well. Maybe we can go to the balmy climes of Thailand very quickly. I guess a lot of doorsteps, or at least in front of hotel room doors, you would not have found your International New York Times today. Classic story of course, the New York Times doing a piece about a clock ticking around the Thai monarchy and the local printer. I'm quite surprised as well that actually the local printer even knew that the story was there, because sometimes, you know, people are on the late shift. You don't even know who's sort of pressing the print button. But nevertheless, they're obviously, acutely aware of the laws. I wonder, with everything that the Thai government has to focus on at the moment, Roger, do you think that they probably need to keep the Times on their side, or if in fact this is something that would have irked the junta?
Well, this this whole business about the sort of semi divinity of the king, that all way predates the junta and the military coup, It is, to be honest, the New York Times should have figured out that this would happen, because it's not the first time, and it certainly won't be the last. Maybe they should think about printing their Asian edition somewhere else. I don't know. It would seem logical to me. But either way, I haven't taken the Thai side on this exactly, but I've always had a little bit of understanding, because they're not the only ones who've got legislation against insulting leaders.
I mean, it would be hard to print in Singapore too.
Or through half the Middle East. I mean, you can be jailed, and people are being jailed for insulting President Sisi in Egypt or whatever. You know, there's a whole list of them. Mm. So it's not unique, but there is this strange kind of miasma around it all in Thailand. And as far as I can judge, that this article was really just a sober bit of analysis about the succession. So they're hypersensitive, and what can we say except print somewhere else?
In the interest of time, you can either weigh in on that one, Zainia, or we can just talk about Russia Today, or RT, as it sort of flashes across the top of our screens, if we happen to have it on, of course. But for those not familiar with the story, Russia Today, they've once again attracted the ire of press regulators in this country. Ofcom has delivered a slap in the wrist because the network basically saying that the BBC had faked the image of a chemical attack in Syria.
So, I mean, I think that, I love the story, and it almost takes us full circle back to where we started, which is that we have regulatory systems by which we try and manage the norms, whether it's press norms, whether it's drug norms, whether it's environmental protection norms, and are they fit for purpose? Mm. Based on the story about Volkswagen today, well, the Americans' ones are fit for purpose. We question the European ones. This story, great that Ofcom has slapped the wrist, as you put it, of RT. Is it going to make any difference? Absolutely not. So to some extent, you do have to ask the question of, great that they're doing this, but is it fit for purpose? Not in that case, not at all.
And Roger, who'd be upset? Most of the oligarchs living down in Surrey?
No, I think RT will see it as an example of Western censorship and vicious, liberal democracies posing, and the steel fist underneath the velvet glove, you know, and I can just wait for George Galloway's comments, Jeremy Corbyn's comments, George Galloway, all these Russia Today regulars analyzing this judgment as a piece of brutal tyranny. But of course, we know that it's not like that.
Right. And which also reveals that it sounds like you've got the monitor on to RT in your office quite a bit. We're going to have to leave it there. Xenia Weckert and Roger Boyce, The Times, thanks very much for joining us. That's all the time we have for today's edition of Midori House. Our show is produced by Ben Ryland, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Federico Romagnello, our studio managers and Chris Chilvers. For the next half hour, Chris Lord will keep you company with Monocle's playlist from Istanbul. At 1900 hours, Josh Fennert is here with our design program, Section D, and at 2200, the Monocle Daily is back then. This show will be back, of course, at the very same time at 1800 London time. But for now, for me, goodbye.